Arch of Triumph by Eric Maria Remarque. Chapter 1. The woman veered toward Ravitch. She walked quickly, but with a peculiar stagger. Ravitch first noticed her when she was almost beside him. He saw a pale face, high cheekbones, and wide-set eyes. The face was rigid and mask-like. It looked hollowed out, and her eyes, in the light from the street lamps, had an expression of such glassy emptiness that they caught his attention. The woman passed so close she almost touched him. He reached out and seized her arm with one hand. The next moment she tottered and would have fallen if he had not supported her. He held her arm tight. "Where are you going?" he asked after a moment. The woman stared at him.
"Let me go," she whispered.
Ravitch did not answer. He still held her arm tight.
"Let me go."
The woman barely moved her lips. Ravitch had the impression that she did not see him at all. She was looking through him, somewhere into the empty night. He was only something that had stopped her and toward which she spoke.
"Let me go."
Ravitch saw at once she was no whore. Neither was she drunk. He did not hold her arm so tight now. She could have freed herself easily, but it did not occur to her. Ravitch waited a while. "Where can you really want to go at night, alone, at this time in Paris?" he quietly asked once more, and released her arm. The woman remained silent, but she did not walk on. Once stopped, she seemed unable to move again. Ravitch leaned against the railing of the bridge. He could feel the damp, porous stone under his hands. "Perhaps down there?" He motioned with his head backward and down at the Seine, which moved restlessly toward the shadows of the Pont de l'Alma in a grey and gradually fading glimmer. The woman did not answer. "Too early," Ravitch said. "Too early and much too cold in November." He took out a package of cigarettes and fumbled in his pockets for matches. He saw there were only two left in the little box, and he bent down cautiously in order to shelter the flame with his hands against the soft breeze from the river.
"Give me a cigarette, too,"
the woman said in an almost toneless voice. Ravitch straightened up and held the package toward her. "Algerian. Black tobacco of the Foreign Legion. Probably it's too strong for you. I have nothing else with me." The woman shook her head and took a cigarette. Ravitch held the burning match for her. She smoked hastily, inhaling deeply. Ravitch threw the match over the railing. It fell through the dark like a little shooting star and went out only when it reached the water. A taxi drove slowly across the bridge. The driver stopped. He looked toward them and waited for a moment. Then he stepped on the accelerator and drove along the wet, dark-gleaming Avenue Georges V. Ravitch felt suddenly tired. He had been working all day and had not been able to sleep, and so he had gone out again to drink. But now, unexpectedly, in the wet coolness of the late night, tiredness fell over him like a sack. He looked at the woman. What had made him stop her? Something was wrong with her, that much was clear. But what did it matter to him? He had already seen plenty of women with whom something was wrong, particularly at night, particularly in Paris, and it made no difference to him now, and all he wanted was a few hours' sleep. "Go home," he said. "What are you doing on the streets at this hour? You'll only get into trouble." He turned up the collar of his coat and was about to walk away. The woman looked at him as though she did not understand. "Home?" she repeated. Ravitch shrugged his shoulders. "Home. Back to your apartment, to your hotel. Call it what you like. Somewhere. You don't want to be picked up by the police."
"To the hotel? My God," the woman said.
Ravitch paused. Once more someone who does not know where to go, he thought. He could have foreseen it. It was always the same. At night they did not know where to go, and the next morning they were gone before you were awake. Then they knew where to go. The old cheap desperation that came with the dark and left with it. He threw his cigarette away. As if he himself did not know it, and know it to the point of weariness. "Come, let's go somewhere and have a drink," he said. It was the simplest solution. Afterwards he could pay and leave, and she could decide what to do. The woman made an uncertain movement and stumbled. Ravitch caught hold of her arm. "Tired?" he asked.
"I don't know. I guess so."
"Too tired to sleep?" She nodded. "That can happen. Come along, I'll hold on to you." They walked up the Avenue Marceau. Ravitch felt the woman leaning on him. She did not lean as if she were tired. She leaned as if she were about to fall and had to support herself. They crossed the Avenue Pierre Premier de Serbie. Behind the intersection of the Rue de Chaillot, the street opened up, and, floating and dark in the distance, the mass of the Arc de Triomphe emerged out of the rainy sky. Ravitch pointed to the narrow, lighted entrance of a cellar drinking place. "In here. We'll still be able to get something." It was a bistro frequented by drivers. A few cab drivers and two whores were sitting inside. The drivers were playing cards. The whores were drinking absinthe. With a quick glance, they took stock of the woman. Then they turned indifferently away. The older one yawned audibly. The other began lackadaisically making up her face. In the background, a busboy with the face of a weary rat sprinkled sawdust around and began to sweep the floor. Ravitch and the woman sat down at a table near the entrance. It was more convenient. He could then leave more easily. He did not remove his coat. "What do you want to drink?" he asked.
"I don't know. Anything at all."
"Two Calvados," Ravitch said to the waiter, who was in vest and rolled up shirt sleeves, "and a package of Chesterfields." "Haven't any," the waiter announced. "Only French." "Well then, a pack of Laurent Green." "We don't have any green either, only blue." Ravitch looked at the waiter's arm, on which was tattooed a naked woman walking on clouds. The waiter, following his glance, clenched his fist and made his muscles jump. The woman on the clouds wriggled her belly lasciviously. "All right, blue," Ravitch said. The waiter grinned. "Maybe we still have one green left." He shuffled off. Ravitch's eyes followed him. "Red slippers on his feet," he said, "and a Nautch girl on his arm. He must have served in the Turkish Navy." The woman put her hands on the table. She did it as if she never wanted to lift them again. Her hands had been well cared for, but that meant nothing. Still, they were not too well cared for. Ravitch saw that the nail of the right middle finger was broken. It seemed to have been torn off without having been filed. In some places, the polish was chipped. The waiter brought the glasses and a package of cigarettes.
"Laurent Green. Found one after all."
"I thought you would. Were you in the Navy?"
"No. Circus."
"Better still." Ravitch handed a glass to the woman. "Here, drink this. It's the best thing at this hour. Or would you like coffee?"
"No."
"Drink it all at once."
The woman nodded and emptied the glass. Ravitch studied her. She had a colourless face, almost without expression. The mouth was full but pale, the contours appeared blurred. Only the hair was very beautiful, of a lustrous natural blonde. She wore a Basque beret and under her raincoat a blue tailored suit. The suit had been made by a good tailor, but the green stone in the ring on her hand was much too big to be real.
"Do you want another?"
Ravitch asked. She nodded. He beckoned the waiter.
"Two more Calvados, but bigger glasses."
"Bigger glasses? More in them, too?"
"Yes."
"That would be two double Calvados."
"You've guessed it."
Ravitch decided to finish his drink quickly and leave. He was bored and very tired. Generally, he was patient with such incidents. He had more than 40 years of eventful living behind him. But he was only too well acquainted with situations like this. He had lived in Paris for a number of years and not been able to sleep much at night. Then one saw a lot on the way. The waiter brought the drinks. Ravitch took the penetrating and aromatic-smelling apple brandy and placed it carefully in front of the woman.
"Drink this, too. It doesn't help much, but it warms you up. And whatever's the matter, don't take it too hard. There's nothing that remains serious for long."
The woman looked at him. She did not drink.
"It's true," Ravitch said, "particularly at night. Night exaggerates."
The woman still stared at him.
"You don't have to comfort me," she said.
"All the better."
Ravitch looked around for the waiter. He had had enough. He knew this type, probably Russian, he thought. The minute they sit down somewhere, while they're still wet, they become arrogant.
"Are you Russian?" he asked.
"No."
Ravitch paid and rose to say goodbye. At the same moment, the woman got up, too. She did it silently and naturally. Ravitch looked at her uncertainly. "All right," he thought then, "I can do it just as well outside." It had begun to rain. Ravitch stopped in front of the door.
"Which way are you going?"
He was determined to take the opposite direction.
"I don't know. Somewhere."
"But where do you live?"
The woman made a quick movement.
"I can't go there. No, no, I can't do that. Not there."
Suddenly her eyes were full of a wild fear. She has quarrelled, Ravitch thought, has had some sort of row and has run away. By tomorrow noon she will have thought it over and will go back.
"Well, don't you know anyone to whom you could go? An acquaintance? You could call them up from the bistro."
"No, there's nobody."
"But you must go somewhere. Haven't you any money for a room?"
"I have."
"Then go to a hotel. There are lots of them in the side streets."
The woman did not answer.
"You must go somewhere," Ravitch said impatiently. "You can't stay in the streets in this rain."
The woman drew her raincoat tighter around her.
"You are right," she said, as though she had suddenly come to a decision. "You are quite right. Thanks. Don't trouble about me any more. I'll find a place all right. Thank you."
With one hand she pulled the collar of her coat together.
"Thank you for everything."
She glanced up at Ravitch with an expression of misery and tried unsuccessfully to smile. Then she walked away through the misty rain unhesitatingly and with soundless steps. Ravitch stood still for a moment.
"Damn it," he grumbled,
surprised and irresolute. He did not know how it happened or what it was, the hopeless smile or the look or the empty street or the night. He knew only that he could not let this woman go alone through the mist, this woman who suddenly looked like a lost child. He followed her.
"Come with me," he said gruffly. "We'll find something for you."
They reached the Etoile. The square before them lay in a drizzling greyness, huge and unbounded. The mist was thicker now, and one could no longer see the streets that branched off. There was only the broad square with the scattered dim moons of the street lamps, and with the monumental stone arch which receded into the mist as though it would prop up the melancholy sky and protect beneath itself the faint, lonely flame on the tomb of the unknown soldier, which looked like the last grave of mankind in the midst of night and loneliness. They walked across the square. Ravitch walked fast. He was too tired to think. Beside him he heard the soft, pattering steps of the woman following him silently, with head bent, hands hidden in the pockets of her coat, a small, alien flame of life. And suddenly, in the late loneliness of the square, strangely she seemed to belong to him for a moment, although he did not know anything about her, or just for that reason. She was a stranger to him, as he felt a stranger everywhere, and, in an odd fashion, this seemed to bring her closer to him than many words and the grinding habit of time. Ravitch lived in a small hotel in a side street off the Avenue Wagram, behind the Place des Ternes. It was a rather dilapidated house with just one new touch, the sign above the entrance bearing the inscription, "Hotel International." He rang the bell. "Is there a vacant room?" he asked the boy who opened the door. The boy stared at him sleepily.
"The concierge is not here," he mumbled finally.
"I see that. I asked you if there was a vacant room." The boy shrugged his shoulders helplessly. He saw that Ravitch had a woman with him, but he could not understand why he wanted another room. According to his experience, this was not why women were brought in.
"Madame is asleep. She'd fire me if I woke her up," he said.
He scratched himself vigorously.
"All right, then we'll have to see for ourselves."
Ravitch tipped the boy, took his key and walked upstairs, followed by the woman. Before he unlocked his door, he examined the door next to it. There were no shoes in front of it. He knocked twice. Nobody answered. He carefully tried the knob. The door was locked.
"This room was empty yesterday," he muttered.
We'll try it from the other side. The landlady has probably locked it for fear the bedbugs will get away. He unlocked his room. Sit down for a minute. He pointed to a red horsehair sofa. I'll be back right away. He opened a large window leading to a narrow iron balcony and climbed over the connecting trellis to the adjacent balcony, where he tried the door. It, too, was locked. He came back resignedly.
It's no use. I can't get you another room here.
The woman sat in the corner of the sofa.
May I sit here for a moment?
Ravitch looked at her closely. Her face was crumpled with fatigue. She seemed hardly able to get up again.
You may stay here, he said.
Just for a moment.
You can sleep here. That's the easiest thing.
The woman did not seem to hear him. Slowly, almost automatically, she moved her head.
You should have left me on the street. Now, I think I won't be able...
I don't think so either. You may stay here and sleep. That's the best thing for you to do. We'll see what tomorrow will bring.
The woman looked at him.
I don't want...
My God, Ravitch said, you won't disturb me at all. It's not the first time someone has stayed here overnight because he had nowhere else to go. This is a hotel for refugees. Something like this happens almost every day. You can take the bed. I'll sleep on the sofa. I'm used to it.
No, I'll just stay where I am. If I may only sit here, that's all.
All right, just as you like.
Ravitch took off his coat and hung it on a hook. Then he took a blanket and a cushion from his bed and moved a chair close to the sofa. He fetched a bathrobe from the bathroom and hung it over the chair.
Here, he said, this is what I can give you. If you like, you can have pajamas, too. You'll find some in the drawer over there. I won't trouble about you any more. You may use the bathroom now. I've got to do something in here.
The woman shook her head. Ravitch stood in front of her.
But we'll take off your coat, he said. It's pretty wet. And let me have your hat, too.
She gave him both. He put the cushion in the corner of the sofa.
That's for your head. Here is a chair so that you won't fall off when you go to sleep.
He moved it closer to the sofa.
And now your shoes. Soaked through, of course. A good way to catch cold.
He took off her shoes, got a pair of short woolen socks out of the drawer and slipped them over her feet.
Now, that's better. During critical times, have an eye for comfort. That's an old soldier's maxim.
Thanks, the woman said. Thanks.
Ravitch went into the bathroom and turned on the tap. The water gushed into the basin. He undid his tie and stared absent-mindedly at himself in the mirror. Challenging eyes in deep-shadowed sockets. A narrow face, dead-tired, only the eyes giving it life. Lips too soft for the furrow running from the nose to the mouth. And above the right eye, disappearing into the hair, a long, jagged scar. The telephone bell cut into his thoughts.
Damn it!
For an instant he had forgotten everything. There were such moments of complete oblivion. And there was still the woman sitting in the other room.
I'm coming, he called.
Frightened? He lifted the receiver.
What?
Yes. All right.
Yes, naturally, immediately, yes. Yeah, it will do, yes.
Where?
All right, I'll be there at once. Hot, strong coffee, yes.
He carefully put the receiver down and for a few seconds remained seated on the arm of the sofa.
I've got to go, he said, right now.
The woman rose immediately. She swayed a little and leaned on the chair.
No, no.
For a moment, Ravitch was touched by this obedient readiness.
You can stay here. Go to sleep. I will be gone for an hour or two. I don't know exactly how long. Do stay here.
He got his coat. He had a passing thought and at once forgot it. The woman would not steal. She was not the type. He knew it too well. And there wasn't much she could steal. He was already at the door when the woman asked,
Can't I go with you?
Impossible. Stay here. Take whatever you need. The bed, if you want. There's cognac over there. Go to sleep.
He turned away.
Leave the light on,
the woman said suddenly and quickly. Ravitch took his hand from the knob. Afraid? He asked. She nodded. He pointed to the key.
Lock the door behind me, but don't leave the key in the lock.
There's another key downstairs with which I can get in.
She shook her head.
It's not that. But please leave the light on.
I see. Ravitch looked at her sharply. I wasn't going to turn it off anyway. Leave it on. I know that feeling. I've gone through such times, too.
At the corner of the Rue des Acacias, he got a taxi.
Drive to Rue Lauriston, fast.
The driver made a U-turn and drove into the Avenue Carnot and then into the Avenue de la Forge. As he crossed the Avenue de la Grande Armée, a small two-seater raced toward them from the right. The two cars would have collided had not the street been wet and smooth. But when the two-seater's brake took hold, it skidded into the middle of the street just past the radiator of the taxi. The light car whirled like a carousel. It was a small Renault driven by a man wearing glasses and a black bowler hat. At every turn one saw his white, indignant face for a moment. Then the car came to a stop, facing the arc at the end of the street, as though facing the huge gate to Hades. A small green insect, out of which a pallid fist rose menacingly toward the night sky. The cab driver turned around.
"Have you ever seen anything like that?"
"Yes," Ravitch said.
"But with such a hat? Why does anyone with such a hat have to drive so fast at night?"
"It was his right of way. He was on the main road. Why are you cursing?"
"Of course he was right. That's just why I am cursing."
"What would you have done if he had been wrong?"
"I would have cursed just the same."
"You seem to make life easy for yourself."
"I wouldn't have cursed like that," the driver explained, and turned into the Avenue Foch. "Not so surprised, you understand."
"No."
"Drive slower at intersections." "That's what I was going to do. A damn oil on the street. But what makes you ask me if you don't want to listen to an answer?"
"Because I'm tired," Ravitch replied impatiently.
"Because it's night. Also, if you like, because we are sparks in an unknown wind. Drive on." "Oh, that's something else."
The driver touched his cap with a certain respect.
"That I understand."
"Listen," Ravitch said with suspicion. "Are you Russian?"
"No, but I read a lot while waiting for customers."
"I'm out of luck with Russians today," Ravitch thought. He leaned his head back. "Coffee," he thought. "Very hot, black coffee. Let's hope they have plenty of it. My hands have to be damned steady. If they aren't, Weber will have to give me a shot. Yeah, but I'll be all right." He pulled the window down and slowly and deeply breathed in the moist air.